Good morning, good morning. Well done for getting here for the first session on the second day. That's a challenge in itself for some people. We are here to celebrate 20 years of Sound Division funding, so this session is produced by Commissioner Mann, as you would expect. My name is Jackie Neal. I am a producer, a trainer and a consultant. I'm also head judge of the IMRO Radio Awards, but of most relevance for this morning, I work as an assessor for Sound Division. So I do come from the dark side this morning as well. Since the Sound Division scheme was launched in 2005, nearly 5,000 TV and radio projects have been offered funding of just over €300 million to make programming in Ireland for Irish audiences. Specifically for radio, even since 2020, under the current Sound Vision 4 scheme, nearly €20 million in funding has gone into radio and audio content for just over 750 projects. That includes series, single programmes across all genres, including sport, drama, documentary, music and arts in Irish and English. And the spread of content was broadcast on community, on local radio stations and on national stations. So over the next hour, we're going to hear from five producers who've all been successful in getting funding. And they're going to talk to us about their experiences of applying for funding, getting funding, and more importantly, what they make and how they make it. They've all made a wide range of creative, engaging, award-winning content for community, local and national stations over the last 20 years. We'll hear from them all first individually, and then we'll have a bit of a group discussion, and if there's time at the end, we'll take a couple of questions. So please welcome Claire Cunningham, who's an independent producer with Rockfish Limited in Dublin. She makes content for Lyric and RTE Radio 1 mostly. Brian Kennedy is an independent producer based in Mayo these days. He's a documentary maker and makes content for local radio and most recently for News Talk. Judy Magni Kaneda is a producer and development officer at Radio Nulifa in Dublin. Pádraig Flaherty is an independent producer. He's a programme director and head of operations in Clare FM. And Bernie Dwan is an independent producer, poet and playwright who makes content for Near FM in Dublin. So we're going to start with you, Clare, mainly because you've been successful with Sound and Vision applications for quite a few years.
Yeah, when I was preparing for this, I had a look back just to kind of see, and I realised that the first Sound and Vision round I ever applied for was number 3, and we're now at number 58. So I may be able to claim to be the dinosaur of the Sound and Vision project, the scheme. And also, to my astonishment, discovered I'd been successful in over 30 rounds in getting funding for programmes. Over the years, the programmes I've made, I've got funding from Sound and Vision for RTÉ Radio 1, RTÉ Junior, Shannonside Northern Sound, News Talk, but the vast majority has been for RTÉ Lyric FM, because mostly I make documentaries about arts, literature, culture, writers, music composers, that sort of area. So yes, I've quite a bit of experience.
And for Sound and Vision, were you making programmes? Were you trying to get programmes funded?
My background is actually in publishing. I worked in educational publishing, but we started making audio material, you know, to use in schools, and I just loved going into the radio station and doing those. So I actually did my very, very first program was a documentary for RTÉ Radio 1, and I just made it during my holidays. I spent 2 weeks going up and down the back roads of Donegal, talking to old farmers with no teeth about the hiring fair in Strabane. But then I continued to work in publishing, so it wasn't until, I think it was 7 years later, I left that Sound and Vision started. So it gave me the opportunity to just kind of dip my toe in. So my first application, my first project was for a number of short features, arts features, for at the time Lyric had a weekly arts programme, so I could make short features for them. So I went from making a few short features to kind of full-length documentaries, to making series of documentaries, to just getting the experience and the confidence, I think. And then later on I applied directly to RTÉ, so I had direct commissions for RTÉ for an entire series of across the year for BBC Radio 3, BBC Radio 4, and it all started with the Little Sound of Vision, the first project.
Tell us how it works. Getting Sound and Vision funding with RTÉ backing. How does that process work?
The last number of years, what RTÉ has done is, if there's a Sound and Vision coming up, RTÉ will put out a call in advance of that. And so Lyric might say, you know, we're looking for documentaries about music, about, you know, whatever, it's a topic that obviously would suit the station. Some of the other stations, Radio 1, 2FM, they may or may not, you know, be looking for something as well. So you put in an application to them, which is shorter than the Sound Vision application. So an outline budget and what you plan to make. And then as far as I know, the way the system works is that the group of them sit around in a committee and they say, we'll support this one, and this one, and we'll reject that one and that one. Then they'll give you a letter saying that, you know, if you get the funding, we will support this, we will broadcast it, you know, we'll obey all the rules of Sound and Vision, and we will give you, it's the last while it's been 25% of the budget, and then you apply for the other 75% to Sound and Vision.
How much of a difference has Sound and Vision funding made to your production and your career, I suppose?
Well, most of the programmes I've made would not have been made without Sound and Vision funding, because there just isn't the funding there for the type of arts programmes that I'm making. So I've got a little bit of funding from a few other sources, but the vast majority would not have happened without the Sound and Vision, I think.
We asked everybody to bring a clip today just as an example of some of the work that you're most proud of. Would you like to introduce the clip for us and tell us what the programme is, how that came about?
Okay. I've made quite a few programmes about sort of forgotten writers, forgotten composers. And there was one story I came across a number of years ago about a writer called Jim Phelan. He was born in 1895 in Inchicore in Dublin. He died in 1966. And he had an absolutely extraordinary life. And this clip, so I had spoke to various people, obviously, who knew about his work and knew about him, and I needed an actor to read some of the extracts. So the bit I gave you is the very start of the programme, where it's a clip, a reading by the actor Lorcan Cranage, and he's reading part of the biography, or the autobiography, and at the end you can just hear the son's voice coming in.
Name, Phelan, James Leal. Age, 28. Height, 5 foot 11 inches. Weight, 186 pounds. Occupation, nil. Next of kin, nil. Religion, nil. Property, nil. Previous convictions, nil. Marks and scars, nil. The entries above represent, as records go, the man who sat in Manchester prison and waited for death. Even in the condemned cell, I laughed as the busy, serious, and quite impartial people went earnestly about their task of tabulating statistics. They were getting the record right, putting Jim Phelan on paper. Then I lost the laugh when I realised that the only vitally important entry was the 186 pounds of my weight. They would have to get that right for the hangman.
Luckily for me and him, it was commuted to life in prison. I say luckily for me because otherwise I wouldn't be here talking to you now.
Thank you. Well done. That was a super clip. Really good. Brian, we maybe move on to you then, and your experience is different coming into radio production completely, isn't it?
Yeah, so I mean, I studied music management and media production in Ballyferma College, but I was involved in music technology, so I kind of knew how to put stuff together, but I wanted to tell stories. But at the time, I suppose I was young and I was looking around Ireland and I was seeing all these things in the UK, like BBC New Talent and Channel 4, and I just felt, God, this get a bit annoyed, doesn't it? You know, there's nowhere here that's encouraging younger talent. So the famous Dock on One had an ad on the radio and literally saying, if you have an idea, that's all you need. So I thought, this is unbelievable. So I met with Peter Woods and Niamh O'Brien, we had a couple of pints, and I gave them loads of ideas, and they said, okay, let's work on this. So long story short, I trained in, if you like, with the Dock on One over two or three or four documentaries. And then on the last one, they said, you know, you can get funding for this. It was the BCI at the time, broadcast. I think it was 2010-11. You know, we can put in. And that's when I became aware of Sound and Vision. And I started thinking, geez, you know, I've done a couple with RT. I could maybe put something in my own. So I started looking into it and applying, going through regional stations and almost using what I'd done with RT, saying, well, look, I've done this. Because obviously you have to have a letter of a to broadcast. Yeah. So I would go to, say, Midwest Radio and say, I've done this, I can produce this documentary for you. And that was it then, you know. And I'd like someone once said to me about radio producers, they said they know they have huge amounts of tiny bits of information on lots of things. So I'm always keeping an eye out for ideas and keeping them down. And then I've just been constantly applying since, and yeah.
You have found your speciality, almost your niche, which usually involves quite a bit of travel.
Yeah, I mean, like, people say to me, you only do documentaries as an excuse to travel, don't you? I mean, I wouldn't say that's true, but I wouldn't say it's entirely untrue. But, part of the sound and vision is the Irish and international experiences. I just love that, you know. There's just, we all know about the Irish diaspora, but I've just done so much on, I mean, the list goes on. Like, I mean, I did one called Galway's Mexican Martyrs for Galway Bay about the San Patricios who were in the American and Mexican War, literally a couple of hundred Irish lads who just said, you know what, even though they knew the Americans were going to win, we kind of don't want to fight with the Americans, we fight with the press, and they switched sides. And I was out there, and they're actually, like, in their National Assembly, they're emblazoned up there, they're heroes. You know, Adam William Brown from Mayo has set up the Navy. So there's just so many Irish people all over the world, and that's kind of been the ones that I always go for. It's the Irish in the international context, and how the mark that Irish people have left, the legacies in countries that most Irish people aren't aware of, you know.
So anybody who's applied for Sound of Vision before will be asking, how the hell does he manage to get the numbers to work, to get travelling around the world and the funding all explained? Have you a trick?
No, I just, I mean, listen, I mean, truthfully, I'm working as well, teaching, so I wouldn't be able to afford to do radio. I don't know anyone that could do independent radio production full-time alone in Ireland, you know. So I don't make a huge amount of money off it, you know, and obviously because I'm working, I'm paying 50% tax and everything, so I put in for the travel and I put in modest for the production, and you know, sometimes they work, sometimes they don't. But I would do it for cost if I could, because it's such an experience to get to go to some of the places I've got to go to, you know.
You work for local and provide for network for national, like News Talk. Is there any difference in how you approach programmes between the
Yeah, I mean, like, I mentioned the Doc on One. Like, I have such respect for the Doc on One, but I haven't done anything for a long, long time. And, you know, I know it's changing with them, but they, sometimes when you would pitch to them a long time ago, they have the budget then, but they may not need Sound and Vision. But say with the likes of, no, actually wouldn't say so, no, really. Maybe with the likes of News Talk, I do stuff for News Talk. They're not so interested in a national story, a local story. But like, say with Midwest, for example, would that be Mayo based? You know, so like the clip that you're going to play in a minute is Mayo related. So I couldn't pitch maybe a national story to them. Galway's Mexican Martyr was for Galway Bay. With News Talk, I may pitch a broader story, you know, the way. So that's the only real difference. But other than that, no, it's like you said, you pitch them a solid idea and then they get the letter. Once you have the letter, it's on to the application.
So set this clip up for us then.
Yeah, so I'm saying it's Mayo based, and then you hear the accent and you go, that's a strange Mayo accent. But no, it's about a lady called Mary O'Malley, who was, you know, late 70s, 5 foot something, like just force of nature, who lives out in Nairobi, walks around the slums, and runs a counter-human trafficking organization and takes part in dawn raids, and is, you know, whose life has been threatened so many times. And it's just, you know, you wouldn't believe it unless you met her and saw what she did, the work that she does. And I suppose I just sent this clip because there was a moment in the documentary where, you know, we all fortunately know about human trafficking, and, you know, there's a different elements of it, but this is an element in the story where a guy who works there told me about a part of human trafficking that I wasn't aware of, and it kind of really shook me, you know.
Organ harvesting in the indirect sense of how it happens in this country is not a big secret, because we have ourselves rescued up to 6 ladies. These women are, through an IVF process, are not, the ovaries are not fertilized by an African.
It's by the person overseas.
Yes, the overseas, because they want a genetic connection, and therefore one of the key things that would determine, like, the conformity in terms of organ transplant is the genetic factor. So one of the things they are doing is they transmit those sperms into the fertilization of the ovary to carry a baby who has a genetic racial connection with where they are being taken.
And what happens when the baby is born?
When the baby is born, by the way, the time the baby is born, all the documents are prepared, proper documents, because they are lifted from Nairobi to those countries. And therefore, by the time this is done, the documents for registration, their passport, travel documents, and their parentage, all fake documentation. And they are immediately moved out of location once this happens. Actually, maybe I'll show you the video of some of the women talking, and it's all translated in English. We have it! And that's our copyright product.
You'll have women talking, but it's happening to them.
We do! And you'll also hear how how intricately complex this operation works actually in Kenya. So it's not a story.
It's not a
we
secret.
Have real people. We are brave people.
That's a tough story to hear. Well done. Why on earth did you find that guy?
Well, I found Mary O'Malley for us, so she's the one who runs all that, and she hired him, and she's a load of people who work in the slums, and they know that, like, you know, if you ever go into one of these slums in Nairobi and in different parts of Africa, they're like mini cities, could be a million people, and you never get around there unless you knew. So, I mean, they have a deep, deep network into it, but yeah, it's just horrific, you know, but the work that this lady does, you know, it's just unbelievable, you know, like, it's just day to day there. Out there in the slums rescuing people. But yeah, I wasn't expecting that, you know. I mean, I'd already interviewed people who'd been, you know, the usual routes, promised jobs in the Gulf, and gone out there, and they'd been enslaved or put into prostitution. Children who were begging in on the streets of Kenya that were from Uganda, whose parents were told they were going to boarding school, and they're forced. And there was all of that horrible stuff, but this was just another level, you know.
Tough to listen to. Thank you for giving us that clip. We'll move on to Judy Meg, so you're based in Dublin with Radio Linifa, so it's a community station, Irish language. Maybe set up the context of the station on how you got into being full-time work with them.
Yeah, so I started as a volunteer at Radio Linifa and was hugely supported by the station to get experience, an opportunity which I wouldn't have gotten anywhere else. And that's how I got my first Sound of Vision project with the support of the station, particularly the station manager, Marisha Fianna, to get that first project across the line, to get the funding. And it basically made me a radio producer. It was my first opportunity to make radio and actually be paid to make a project. And it was mind-blowing, really, at the time that someone was going to let me make this project. And Radio Linifa caters to Irish speakers in Dublin, but broader, like we are available online and we have listeners all over the place. We have about, say, 80 to 100 volunteers who make programs with us and a small staff. So it's always trying to, I suppose, push the boundaries of what is expected in Irish language radio. It was, you know, founded with that aim to make something different and to represent the diversity of Irish speakers, that it's not one homogenous group. And Sound of Vision has allowed us to make programmes that we certainly wouldn't have had the resources to make otherwise, and to also push the boundaries of what you would normally hear in Irish, I suppose.
How important is it for a community station like yours to be applying for funding on an equal platform to Radio 1 or News Talk?
I think it's really important, and it also gives us the opportunity to sort of demonstrate the talent that is within the community radio sector. Our programmes have gone on to compete with, you know, programmes produced by BBC in international competitions, and we're very proud of the output. But we, like all community radio stations, we have limited resources, and so the scheme is really important to give us the opportunity to make things that we just would not be able to make otherwise.
Part of your role is development and training now, so do you see that the benefits of your volunteers working on productions like this?
Absolutely, and I think it's also great for the station in terms of the pride in the station, that we have all these productions that people hear and people can be involved in, and to know that we're out there competing with bigger stations with much more resources and that kind of thing. So there's great opportunities. We're always open to ideas from our volunteers, and we can say to them, look, you know, I started as a volunteer, now I'm a radio producer, and you can do it too. That said, obviously there are a lot of challenges. It's very difficult to get that funding, so they have to go in knowing that. But community stations are always supporting volunteers to do that, so I think community stations are probably the ones that would most support new people to the sector to undertake something like a Sound and Vision project.
It is crucial entry level stuff, isn't it, really, to be able to get people in and learn without, you know, with freedom probably.
That's it. I suppose it's probably best to learn on the job.
Yeah.
You know, you can do a lot of courses, and courses are great, but there's nothing like having to actually deliver projects at the end and having to do it all yourself.
So tell us about the sort of content that you've made as a producer, as well as what comes on the station through Sound and Vision funding.
So I've made a wide variety of things, a lot of documentaries, some children's programmes, plays, played around with formats a little bit. We had a sort of talk show style format for a programme a couple of years ago, which also incorporated historical drama. I've made stuff for News Talk and RT Junior Radio as well as an independent producer. And Radio Nilifa has made like a wide variety of programmes through the Sound and Vision scheme, different kinds of things.
So set this clip up for us that you sent me.
This is a clip from Whose Child, which is a drama series by Rael Fonny Nanon. It's a very funny, irreverent, and clever series. And this follows the antics of Alva, who is a very spoilt, badly behaved young woman whose father is despairing of her and sending her to various prestigious institutions over the summer for work in the hope of putting manners on her, which obviously doesn't work. So in this clip, she is minding the Lord Mayor's children, one of whom is a teenager called Anastasia, and she sort of met her match with Anastasia, who may be more badly behaved than Alva herself, and Anastasia has decided she's self-employed, actually, on OnlyFans.
Okay. Need the humor to A. Beige Rasher Bob. I guess Bobby, Misha and Bobby. Will Misha and Mon Upper Yana Sear and Ask it like a Gurry Mayad Argus a Shock of Mahunta's Wink? Will Misha Glanatoon while Mo Marnock will man on a job charge salary? Tossa and Bobby.
A Marshnay. Had a shade Liana Dirk of Amul. Not until now I'm a good job of a good to take.
I may aim us to her are only fans of Hashki. Can yard arrogant Adam Hain.
Mohawk quit arrogant saying a good can of good responses for Cafe Trustman, Boher Martian.
Not the Anada. I may so well not wait to. Ni they may crook a heart and tan than old Hashin he has died at it is his new maid of one he's with it, not a half me.
Only fans?
Shan, and can fear on a shandini. Couple of photo shoot new agath me, I guess the embrace gun be. Oh, I'll be rubby of shamanish. Coffer Adwall. In a geeshin, shan't can I marry the amber the lahitha. Pani, Giabla, Drockrakham.
Who were the voices in that, just out of interest?
That's Sinead Niulachan as Alva, and it's Hilary Bowen Walsh in Anastasia. So we had a great cast. We also had Zarina Nihonachu, Garoa Do Morocha, and Lilia Nikineza. So we had a lot of fun recording it, and yeah, it's great.
Brilliant. Thank you. Thank you. Parik, you're in a slightly different position this year. Based at Clare FM, you lead the place, but you also work as an independent producer and make content and make a lot of documentary.
Pretty much, yeah.
Yeah.
So it's kind of wearing two hats, because many years ago we identified in Clare FM that we needed to have a variation of our programming, and to have that we needed funding. And that's when we started doing the applications and started kind of creating different content, which has really helped the station enormously well, both as an independent from my perspective and from the station's perspective as well.
What sort of content were you making? Were you always looking for local stories, for local people?
It's mainly local stories. Look, at County Clare is full of many things, but culture is huge in County Clare, so we've got a lot of stories, great storytellers. So it's all about the kind of local stories and the local angle that wouldn't have been covered in any other way. There's many stuff that we would have done that would have covered the last 50 to 90 years and bring it back to a new audience, which is essential as well.
Well, I think audience is key. You know, all of us, all what we do is for the audience. Do you feel the audience would be missing out if they weren't getting that sort of content?
Absolutely.
Is it anywhere else?
It is, because, well, I'm sure it is now, but from our own perspective, there's a lot of these stories that hasn't been told. There's a lot of traditional stories that hasn't been told, documentaries that would just never have been heard of. So from that perspective, it's essential, because it's like every audience, they're growing older, and we want to kind of re-educate people that mightn't have been aware of the old stories. Like there's a picture up here behind me of Edna O'Brien, and not a lot of people would have heard of her stories and her controversial stories in the 60s. So to bring that back to a new audience is really relevant. You know, it has to be done.
And is it mostly documentary content or that stand alone, or do you make, I know a lot of applications come in for short features that run across, you know, morning shows and things like that.
Mainly documentaries and radio features. And the important thing about Sound and Vision for us as well is the placement of it. Because even though I know the times is from 7 a.m. to 9, we're not going to put it on at 10 to 9 and bury it. We put a prime time slap bang in the middle of our highest rated show, which is important as well, because you expose the audience to it, and also the repeat element of it as well, which is essential to repeat it again at a later stage.
Do you use your team to help make the programmes? Do they learn from that experience?
Yeah, they do, because the one thing about Clare FM is like a big family, and everybody mucks in. And as an independent producer, people will be kind of watching and taking a look and getting to know how to do the right interviews and the right production techniques. As a station, when we produce stuff independently, to take somebody, say, from our news team and bring them into a kind of a feature, that's great, because they feel, you know, they feel hugely involved in a different project that they wouldn't usually be exposed to. So that's important as well from their development, and that works really well.
Do you take content and ideas then from other independent producers? Can people come to you and
Sure, absolutely. Yeah, it's open to everyone. There's never a barrier on the door or anything like that. If there's a story that's good, if it's fleshed out well, if there's a good plan behind it, absolutely.
Irish or English?
Irish audience.
Irish or English? Either.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah, no problem.
So anybody who's an independent producer,
yeah, get the application
take
note
of, take note of his name and number, and you'll be tracked down. Tell us about this particular programme that's won some awards for you as well.
Yeah, so it's Falsely Accused. It's a 60-minute radio documentary about an innocent native called Bernard Lynch. Bernard was a priest, and he started his priestly training many, many years ago. And during that time, he felt he was attracted to men, and he felt he was gay. So at that time, the Catholic Church said, okay, we don't want to hear about it. So they shipped him over to New York. And at that stage, there was an epidemic going on in New York with the AIDS virus. And when families were deserting people, Bernard was by their side and to give them comfort. And then his superiors at that time Bernard is also working in a secondary school, and he's told by his superiors, stop helping these people, quote unquote, it's not a good look for the church, or you'll be sorry. But he kept helping them, and he kept giving them help. And one day he was in his office, and the FBI called in and had a search warrant, and they searched his office, and at that stage he was accused of sexually molesting a teenager. And he went on for a number of weeks, and he came back home to Ennis, because at that stage it was breaking in Ireland. He was on the front of one of the newspapers in a crucifix, and his picture taken. And this clip that you're about to hear is when he got news that his friends in New York called him to say that there was an arrest warrant for him and he was a fugitive.
But basically they had put out a statement that they were looking for me, that I was a fugitive from justice, that there were several boys making this accusation, and that I would eventually be extradited. Of course, I knew immediately where it was coming from. My friends were on from New York, the AIDS community, the gay community, an attorney friend. I said, Bernard, I said, this is serious. And it's not about you, but you're going to have to pay the price. I cried bitterly. I thought of my family first and foremost, because I knew it was lying in the papers, and the papers weren't nice here or anywhere.
So that's what happened. We're very fortunate because that particular documentary was very good to all of us. It won a Gold Award at the New York Awards. I got an award from Clare County Council. Bernard himself got a civic award. And Bernard left New York a number of years ago, and he's living in London now. And he was made Free Man of London. Now, I don't know what the significance of it is, but to be a Free Man of London, you have to walk across sheep, across London Bridge. So I'm not too sure of the significance of that. I'm sure there's a documentary or something like that. But it's been very good. And the great thing about that particular documentary, while it all went on, Bernard always felt his story wasn't fully told. But it was told in the documentary, and he was thrilled with it. And the latest bit of news on it, and this documentary would never have happened if it wasn't for Sound of Vision. There was a film producer that heard it in the States and contacted me about it. And they're now going to make a movie about Bernard's life. And one of the actors is very well known that's going to play a young Father Bernard. So
you're not going to tell us who it is, no?
Just think of the Banshees and you'll have an idea of it, yeah.
But, right, you heard it here first.
look, it's been a great success story, but it couldn't have been done without Sound of Vision.
That's fantastic. Thank you. Bernie, I suppose you're almost the newcomer of this crowd of Sound of Vision alumni.
I am, yeah.
2020, was that the first time you applied?
Yeah.
But your strike rate has been...
14.
14 since 2020, isn't that amazing? Fantastic. Tell us that story then, how from not having ever been involved in that sort of stuff, and then suddenly 14 programmes later, all funded in 5 years.
Thanks, Jackie. So I suppose I spent a good few years teaching English literature and history to adults in Sallynagan and Dunleary, and then I also was teaching journalism in Dunleary Further Education Institute. So I was always interested in some form of media, and then a fellow poet told me about Near FM. I'd never heard of Near FM, and I looked them up on the website, and I could see they were doing... a volunteer course, training course, so I signed up for that. And, they're so inclusive and so accommodating. So I did the course, and out of that then I did a 26-part history series, the A to Z of Historical Blunders, Mistakes in History that should never, ever, ever be repeated. And they facilitated me to do that. And then I heard about Sound and Vision. Another fellow poet or playwright told me about the Sound and Vision, and I started applying. And Near FM, first of all, I was always shocked when I got the funding, and secondly, I was very pleased when Near FM always agreed to broadcast my work. So I'm very committed to community radio. I think community radio is a wonderful, wonderful institution, and that's where I always would like to see my work broadcast.
Tell us a bit about the first couple of programmes that you made. You made the history one.
Okay, so that wasn't funded. So yes. The first funded one was a series called Growing Up Between the Dust Jackets, and it was an 8-part series about the coming-of-age novel and how different coming-of-age novels, how people in society, in different aspects of society, relate to different coming-of-age novels. So I had migrants in, I had LGBTQ+ people in, I had young fellas in who might be attracted to gangs and, unsavoury social websites. I had women in who had convent educations. I had 8 separate groups in. But what I could never get over was they were all willing to read 2 or 3 novels before they came on to do their stint. And, you know, I'm committed to bringing literature to the general community, but I'm more committed again to giving women a voice from 8 to 99, because that's the age span I've interviewed. I've interviewed 8-year-olds, and my most recent oldest person was 99, and she was talking about recalling the reading she did, because it's a particular series I'm working on now. It's about literature and children's literature and reading. So where am I going with that now?
You're passionate though about community, getting community voices.
Oh, absolutely. So I mean, every single project I do has, besides the core performers, like if it's a play or if it's a series, all my music would be provided by a choir, not a professional choir. Like at the moment I'm working with the Dublin Gay Men's Choir. I've worked with gospel singers, I've worked with boy sopranos, I've worked with bugle players from the Army School of Music, I've worked with singers from the traveller community. So anyone, you know, who, if I want music, I'll always get it from people like that. And the same with poetry. There's an awful lot of, you know, fine poets out there who are probably, you know, working in the classroom or, you know, working in different areas of media, and they're producing really good poetry. So an awful lot of my work, you know, includes poetry. You know, at intervals we'll have someone read a poem that's relating to the topic, you know. So, yes, so literature and history. And I'm always surprised as well that I pick something. Sometimes people think it's a bit esoteric because I'm a fan of Middle English. So I might pick something by Chaucer. And I did a series based on Chaucer, based on his prologue characters, but again, I wanted to turn it on its head, and I wanted it to be all about women. So I had a well-known Irish actor called Deirdre Monaghan. She signed up to do the Middle English readings. And then I had an African-Irish student from UCD do the modern version of those readings. So she did a real kind of bulgy, quirky, modern version, and Deirdre did the beautifully accurate Middle English readings. And I've done the same with Shakespeare. I took his Seven Ages of Man speech, which is obviously all about men, and I turned that on its head and I made it all about women. So I interviewed seven stages of life for women. I couldn't interview babies, so I interviewed mothers of new babies, and then I brought it up to 8-year-olds in second class, TY students in Merino College, and then parents working, juggling parenting and working, and then older people, active old people, then older people, and then extremely old people. Yeah. Cool. And that's what that clip would be about.
Well, we hear the clip, and then I will we'll pick up again more. So that's on this clip.
I feel like it's a competition between myself and other parents, especially being on social media. Sometimes it comes across as a competition.
It's hard to tell what boys would be because you're not them, but when you're a girl, you sort of know it because you already are one, so.
In a relationship, you really need to have banter so you can actually, like, talk things out, because some boys, after an argument, they just say, no, we're done.
I am not a good multitasker. I hate multitasking, but I think in this society, if you are a mother, you inevitably have to multitask.
And if you think about the number of photographs we have on our phone of our own grandchildren, I mean, you get them every day, and I have thousands of them this stage.
When the time comes for us to die, a heart attack, preferably in bed.
Yes, go to bed one night and wake up dead in the morning. Yes, that way. And he's got himself and Fred and go together. He gets such a fright when he sees me dead that he's out.
When did you start travelling, say, outside of Ireland?
10 years ago, yeah, after so many
10
years.
10 years ago? You went to Ireland for the first time?
Yeah, went to stand the hands, didn't have the money. Nothing like that ever happened to us. Different, because we never seen that like that before. Yeah.
Death isn't something I fear. The dying I am apprehensive of, but I just hope that that will go reasonably smoothly.
Thank you. I mean, those are just, you know, five examples of you know, the hundreds of examples of programs that are being made all the time, but we want a range of content just in those five, and even amongst each of these five people, the range of content they could have offered us to play today was endless, so it was a joy to be able to pick bits and pieces. Just to broaden the discussion a bit, but to go back to you, Bernie, the content that you're making, to me, if you were told me it was on Lyric or Radio 1, I would be saying, yeah, I can see that sitting there. Have you tried to move stuff on or pass it on to national stations, or are you so committed?
I haven't really looked into that yet. So it doesn't... I don't really know what to say there yet, because I haven't looked into it. Is there anyone here interested?
Well, maybe there might be people here who might track you down later. Some of that content is definitely...
I'm only sorry you didn't hear. I had lovely medieval music, but it would have taken up the talk time, and I thought the talk was more interesting. Yeah.
So you've obviously all got the knack, and we have to mention the dreaded paperwork. We're not getting into all of it, but there's no denying that it's not a 5-minute job applying for sound and vision. Claire, you've probably been doing it the longest. Is there a knack, or is it just give yourself time? If you're, you know, giving advice to people who are starting off trying to apply for stuff.
Okay, I'll start with the positives. It's not as excruciating as it used to be. I remember in the early days, literally you had to supply, I think it was 5, maybe it was 6 hard copy paper examples of your application. I can remember literally sitting on the floor collating, you know, all these dozens and dozens of pages and putting them together. And then it went online, and then at one stage I can remember that even though my company was registered as a supplier and all the information was in there, every single time I applied, I had to send them the articles of association of the company, and send them again, send them again, send them again. So that's gone. So there have been some improvements over the years. But, you can't underestimate. It is very onerous. There's a lot of work. I could easily spend 2 weeks putting an application together. You're not being paid for that work if you're an independent, and then you apply and then you don't get funding, and that's it. And there is a lot of paperwork with it, and an awful lot of detail is being asked for. And
sorry, sometimes you get funding. You've been lucky to get a lot of funding, but you've also had rejections along the way. How do you find the process? And if you get a rejection, is that
What I like about it is the feedback. If you get feedback where a particular element of it didn't come through, or to expand on a particular topic, I think that's brilliant. I really do, because if you're going to reapply, you've got that information, you feel like you've got 90% of the application through. Obviously, if it's significant feedback, it's a different story, but for small critiques here and there, to be able to take that and say, okay, hang on a second, I see where they're coming from, I understand, and if you're going to work it into it, it's a great way of going back with the next application and say, look, I've addressed these concerns, and I fixed them. So hopefully then at that stage you think you're a little bit closer to the end line.
Yeah. Judy Meg, you actually help other people now do their forms and things as well. Is it a useful sort of strategy to start to get your planning done for the programme as well?
Oh, yeah, I would... recommend, well, with sound and vision applications, give yourself as much time as possible. but yeah, getting your thoughts down, and it is a very, very detailed application. There has to be an element of creativity in the application, in that if you have to do a very, very detailed running order, you have to kind of guess what people will say in the documentary, which seems a little weird, really. So you're putting in, you're like, this is what it might sound like, but I can't guarantee that this person's going to say this, or, so there's a knack to it, to writing it, and sort of allowing that flexibility that, you know what, it might change a bit, it might not be exactly as on paper, but there's no getting around it. It is a huge amount of paperwork, and it is quite intimidating for someone who hasn't got that experience. Like, there's absolutely no chance I would have been able to get my first series across the line without the support of Radio Nilifa, and I'd say that's the same with a lot of community stations. So you know, for new people, it's, you definitely need to be supported in it.
And I suppose that is it's the weighing it up between it is government money and they're not going to give it away for free. And I can tell you, in Northern Ireland, where we can't access Sound and Vision for radio and across the whole of the UK and Europe, they are so envious of, you know, so it is worth more than the hassle of having to get the paperwork right out.
Oh, absolutely, yeah, it is, and it's great.
Brian, we spent a lot of time earlier talking about podcasts and things. How do you think, you know, this is purely for radio first and there are digital elements and things. Can you see that is going to have to maybe change as audio listening changes, as radio habits changing?
Well, I mean, because I do strictly documentaries, I think, actually someone said this to me the other day in a conversation with something else, you know, well, I listen to radio all the time, you know, just music or news, but I would never listen to a podcast on, you know, on live. Sorry, radio documentary live, I always do them on podcast. So, you know, I do think about it and think, yeah, something has to change, but it's very difficult from the Cumsley Lamont's point of view. You know, how do you fund a podcast? How do you guarantee listenership? You know, would they have their own podcast forum, like, you know, like BBC Sounds has, and then you'd be gone onto that? Maybe, but I mean, say with the likes of News Talk, it's fine because it's broadcast live and then they're always there as a podcast. But some of the smaller radio stations I do stuff for don't really have that facility. So, yeah, it's a conundrum. Everything's already changed, but something's going to have to shift.
Yeah, I mean, we've talked about it quite a lot across the last day and a bit already about how listening habits have changed. So I presume over time that maybe the digital elements will have to tweak accordingly. What about the legacy of programmes? Once you've made the programme, and especially if it sits on a community station and it goes out maybe once, maybe you repeat it, what else can we do with those programmes? I mean, you know, are you entering awards? Are you trying to push them on your own websites or your own podcasts? Or, you know, for any of you, what's the next stage with the programme once it's gone, to give it a bit of life?
Well, on Near FM, the podcast is there in perpetuity. It's there, you know. So, personally, I'm not big into social media. I just don't like that landscape for the last few years, and I've pulled back from it. So I do know that one of my colleagues in Near FM puts drama up on YouTube and Spotify, so he's included 5 of my plays in there as well, so that's great. So other than that, I mean, to have it there, to have a link to it somewhere sure has to be good, hasn't it? Yeah. And it's easy to find.
Claire?
With Lyric FM, the Lyric Feature podcast, it used to be that they were just broadcast, sometimes repeated. The way it works is that I license the programme to RTÉ for 5 years. For 2 years, they have exclusive rights to broadcast it, and 3 years, non-exclusive. I live in hope of syndicating my work around the world, but it hasn't happened yet. But the last number of years, the Lyric Feature has been made available as the Lyric Feature podcast, so it's available on all the platforms, which is wonderful. And I find, you know, I might get a message from Australia where someone has heard the programme, which wouldn't have happened. We all, when we make the programmes, we have to deliver physically. They haven't heard of WeTransfer.ie yet in from Michelle Lamont. I'm sure they will soon. But we all have to send in copies of our programmes, and everything is archived. And it would be lovely if at some stage that all those thousands of programmes were somehow the Michelle Lamont could make them available on an archive, that we could access them and hear everybody else's work. I presume maybe something like that will happen in future.
Yeah, I think that's it. Yeah. Maybe that's another funding round, Brian. You need another project for that. Add it to the list. Add it to the list. We've got a couple of minutes. Has anybody got any questions? There's a microphone there.
Great panel. Thanks a million. My name's Kieran Ryan. I'm a lecturer in Marymount College in Limerick. Also have been an independent producer in the past. I've been incredibly fortunate with Sound and Vision. Like Brian, it's brought me to 3 continents outside our own to make different docs. But one of the things, and I'm trying not to bite the hand that feeds us, a number of years back I made something for News Talk, and somebody, a program director at a local commercial station, slipped into my DMs, as we say, and suggested that he would like to re-air it because it had a particular local flavour. And I said, oh, and that's fine. And I was in a financially precarious position at the time. And I goes, you know, what would you like to pay for it if you want to air this for an hour? And he said, oh, we don't pay for documentaries. And I said, he goes, but what would you look at a fee? And I just said, something nominal. I goes, this is an hour of airtime, €100. And he said, no. And I suppose my point here has Sound and Vision, to an extent, absolved the kind of financial responsibility of broadcasters to fund documentaries, and at the same time, has it made it a situation for independent producers like yourselves that it's kind of the only game in town, and that we're overly reliant on it. And I've been very fortunate with the scheme, love the scheme, but I'm just wondering, has it kind of created that environment? Thank you.
Yeah, I think that's a very interesting point, but I suppose, hadn't thought about the way you're framing it, I just think the reality is, and maybe, you know, you think from Claire Fairham's point of view, I just don't think small stations could at all afford to pay producers externally. I just don't think they could, so therefore I think the service is great. Like, I know the Doc and Mon at one stage would definitely afford to do it. I did documentaries with them, more with them, that weren't funded by Sound and Vision. But yeah, it's definitely there, but I don't know if that's the fault of the Sound and Vision more. I don't know, that's really, it's an interesting one. It definitely isn't. I mean, I would never expect to approach any station other than RTÉ's Doc and Mon and have them, even News Talk, afford to be able to pay me to do a piece of radio work as an independent without Sound and Vision. But whose fault it is or why it is, I don't know really, but it's definitely something.
I suppose it's in the small print. I mean, it's like you say, you know, the arrangement you have after 5 years, you can do what you like with that programme to a certain extent, and that's maybe, you know, a lot of these programmes have long tails, I suppose. Would you say, is that anybody else from that? Any experience of that, of trying to move on your content? No? Any other questions?
Thank you. My name is Mercedes. I work near FM. And I wonder why Film Ireland sets up workshops for helping producers to create production applications. So I wonder why not it's not happening for radio. Just that, you know. Film Ireland has workshops to help people put up applications for productions. Okay, so I just wonder why not for radio.
Well, I mean, I think for Sound and Vision there are seminars every so often for that sort of thing. But there is, I mean, Theresa's here from Learning Ways.
Actual workshops, you know, people attend there and they go in person. And
yeah, but that, yeah. Learning Ways, I have a word with Theresa because Learning Ways do a lot of that sort of work for production training. So, do you want to shout back?
Learning Waves, we work with the independent radio sector and we do provide workshops. Obviously, since COVID, they've gone online. But there is, prior to that, we were doing them in person, where we would bring people like you have on the stage this morning as well, to people from Commission the Man, to talk about the application process, to talk about ideas and to talk about then putting the actual application together. So it's something that we would be working with Commission the Man as well too, when the funding rounds are announced, and we do workshops for people across the industry, independent producers, people working within the independent sector, people working in the community sector. They are open to everybody.
Yeah.
Well, if you go to learningwaves.ie and give me an email next week, we'll come back to you.
There was an association for a number of years as well called AIRPI, Association of Independent Radio Producers of Ireland. You know, there's a few little independents we came together, and that's one of the things we did was we shared knowledge among ourselves, you know, and maybe had our own little workshops and training sessions, and got some funding from Commission Yaman to keep it going. But it was very small association. We were all trying to make a living. We, you know, got enough funding, you know, to run a certain number of things. But it was all being run on a voluntary basis, you know, on our own time. And eventually everyone who was willing to be on the committee had been on the committee, and it just sort of ran out of steam. But there is a lack of something like that. And often, like, there might be an issue might come up, and all the little independents were contacting the stations individually or contacting the Commission individually. It would be lovely if we had an association, but, you know, who would put it together, who would run it, I don't know. I've done my bit.
Thank you very much. We're nearly out of time now. I'm being a good radio person. I'm hitting the junction on time. So just to say, the Round 58 results, if you're waiting for your results, they're coming out the end of March. And then there'll be a new round opening in quarter two, so April time, and Sound Vision, obviously the website, will give you any other details and update. Will you please thank our panel this morning?